Here are two very talented guys. They've been partners for years. They're multi-talented. You know them as children's performers and performers for adults. I've always wondered whether or not they really are giants. I guess we'll find out. The name is so intriguing. Let's welcome them now. They might be giants.
John Flansburgh and Tom Linnell.
Thank you, Nick. You can put that down.
Hi. Welcome.
I'm really sorry. Are you a religious man?
I'm becoming one. Watching.
Yeah. Yeah.
All I can say is they've got killer Wi-Fi backstage. It's fantastic. We want to thank you for completely dismantling our public radio career in one broad stroke.
I thought what I'd do is save all the apologies for the end of the show and just give a big mass blanket apology. So I won't even bother right now. Hey, it's great to meet you. Great to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too.
You know how important first impressions are.
So I walked backstage, and John, you guys were... Oh, yes.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John.
John is adjusting the mic.
So. I'm preoccupied with stagecraft.
Yeah. No, I'm a little confused. I don't know if you were John or John, but whichever one you are, thank you.
Right. So when I walked backstage, you guys were discussing mitochondria.
Yes, yes.
I heard that word.
Yes.
Have you done a song about mitochondria?
No, we were just looking at YouTube videos of kittens. And there was a video of kittens with mitochondria. I guess it's called mitochondria. The fainting goat syndrome.
Yes, fainting goats.
Mitochondria, isn't that something else?
Mitochondria is like, yeah, it's a part of a cell, the nucleus or
right.
something.
Yeah, yeah. The syndrome.
So everybody, like, all kittens have mitochondria.
Everything has mitochondria.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything has mitochondria.
Everybody clap for mitochondria. Right.
Not just the fainting kittens.
This is exactly the sort of stuff I was hoping to get into.
This is a dream come true for me, Andy, because this is the only time in your 25 years of doing radio that you've had good microphone technique. Because you can't push it aside.
No, I can't. That's right, Kenny.
We're going to have to do this every week.
So Andy's kind of got the jazz musician mic thing. Or...
I'm playing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. Yeah.
I've only been doing it 20 years, so I'm still learning. I'm a work in progress.
So one thing I wanted to ask you guys
about... God's not done with you yet.
God is very close to being done with me.
They might be giants, kind of. You kind of foretold the internet with the Dial-A-Song project.
You know, people say that, but I sort of feel like... I think it's sort of different. I think... Part of the thing that is hard to remember is how pitiful it seemed at the time.
Why don't you remind people what it was?
Well, it was a phone machine attached to my telephone line in my kitchen in Brooklyn, New York, that played a different song by the band pretty much every day. And it was a way to sort of find people. We were playing in clubs in the Lower East Side and in the East Village in the middle of the night and kind of playing for club kids. You know, it was like the Pyramid and APC and that sort of, yeah, we're going on at 3 a.m., come on down kind of thing. And it just had a very inside New York City Demi Monde kind of deal to it. So it was our attempt to sort of spread the word about the band beyond just that disco moment. I mean, it was a sort of performance art. You ever see the film Legal Eagles?
No, I have not. Andy has.
I have seen Legal Eagles. Robert Redford Legal.
Yeah, that's right. It's
comedy.
Middlebrow. Yeah. Everyone who made it is smarter than the movie. But
everyone connected with that movie is smarter than the movie.
Yeah, it's like they,
okay. Yeah,
but there's a fantastic performance art scene in the middle of it with
Daryl Hannah.
Daryl Hannah. Yeah.
Well, are you guys associated with that movie?
No, I'm just trying to explain what performance art is to people.
That's exactly the reference I would have used.
The worst.
But how many songs did you put out as Dial-A-Song?
All of them, basically. Everything we ever, for a long period of time, that was the clearinghouse for every song that we wrote, including ones that never went anywhere else.
Yeah. I think things that might not even qualify technically as songs were part of it. Right. It was a good training ground for us.
Between the two of you, what percentage of your songs that you've composed and copyrighted could you name? 100%?
Oh, no, not even close. Well, you've also done, like, television stuff where you're literally doing five cues in a day.
I wouldn't count those.
I guess. Okay. Well, it's probably, I don't know, there's probably, I don't know, how many songs have we really done?
I don't know. I feel like we are individually dumber than the projects that we represent.
Yeah. No. Hey, that reminds me of a movie. Have you ever seen Legal Eagles?
Yeah. With Daryl Hannah.
No, not that one. The other Legal Eagles. So wait, have you written 1,000 songs? Wait, I don't even know what number.
I think it's actually might be more than that, but most of them are not.
We've written 1,000 crappy songs.
Yeah. No, you have not.
At least.
Yeah.
Now, if I name some things, can you just tell me if you've ever written about them?
We are running out of nouns very quickly as songwriters. That is a fact.
Have you ever written a song about, oh, say, crucifixions?
No.
I don't think so. Well, there is.
Has crucifixion, has that word ever been mentioned in any song?
Crucify? We have this word stigmatized. It's in one of our songs.
Yeah.
Okay. That counts.
Yeah.
I don't know. Criminal activities.
Yeah.
This is from your fans' wiki. This might be a wiki.
Oh, yeah. Well, that has a count of all the songs. Is this like the songs in A? Yeah. Well, there you go. Oh, these are song themes.
Yeah, your fans are pretty rabid.
Yeah.
Well, they're also very good. They're very completist and they'd be good librarians.
Why is that? Why have you attracted fans like that?
Well, I think it's a sort of Asperger's thing a little bit. You know? I mean, I'm all for it. You know, I think it's great. I've got to tell you, it's great for us because when we play in a town we've played before and we want to know what we played last time we were there, we just go to that site and it's all there. Somebody wrote everything down.
I think some of your Asperger fans are here tonight.
And a whole lot more.
Yeah.
Here we go.
God bless them.
God bless them all. Yeah,
I think it's important to remember that, you know, there are different kinds of, you know, there's the front row, there's the back row, there's all sorts of people.
It's
in
a spectral thing.
Yeah.
There's a spectral.
Getting back to that spectrum thing again.
That's right. Yeah.
Stalkers.
Next question.
So I was going to say, if you didn't have one, you could borrow one of Andy's. That's okay.
Yeah. Mine are now working in shifts. They all have like part-time jobs now.
Really?
Yeah.
I hear that Bob Dylan has so many wealthy stalkers that they actually follow. They have enough money to follow him around permanently.
Really?
That basically, they come to every single show and they're going like, "Bob, why are you singing that song directly to me?" And it's very expensive for him to keep the stalkers at bay.
Now, what did you guys do today?
We rehearsed for our show tomorrow.
Yeah. We were in a rehearsal hall rehearsing.
Yeah, you're like at the end of a huge long tour, right?
Yeah, we've just done we're on the third hairier leg of a big US tour. I guess it's like 55 shows or something like that. So we've played pretty much everywhere in the continental United States.
Is the show tomorrow here in the city?
Tomorrow we're playing in Northampton, Massachusetts at the beautiful Calvin Theater. We have one person familiar with Northampton, Massachusetts.
Wait, now why? Now you've been on tour. It's like an intense tour. Do you rehearse before every?
No.
We've been off for a few weeks, and we just wanted to get back into the swing before we did the first.
There's also like a technical aspect of just making sure that everything works.
So anyone that comes to the show tomorrow will see a show that's been rehearsed. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Wow. Rehearsal. Okay.
It really pays off.
Unlike people that have come here tonight.
Yeah.
And then the tour concludes Saturday night at Terminal 5?
Yes, right. Saturday night's the big final show at Terminal 5. Yes.
And then how are you going to relax after this 6-month long tour?
We're just talking about that. We're going to be so relaxed it's disgusting. Nobody wants to see us like that.
What's the longest you've ever gone without writing a song? Can you guys really go?
The first 18 years of my life.
But since then, it's been every week?
I don't know. We've just been doing it for... The main thing is we've been doing it for so long. There's two of us. It seems like we're prolific, but we're probably normal in terms of our...
No, you're prolific.
It's just that we've literally been doing this for
You're known as being one of the most prolific songwriting teams.
No, I think Guided by Voices has us down. And that's just one guy and a giant... pot of coffee and a bong.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Robert Pollard's written more songs?
Oh, I think he probably, yeah.
Wow.
Now, I was just reading a...
Just in the English accent alone.
I was just reading a book about the Beatles where they describe Lennon and McCartney in the back of a bus, and they said, okay, we have 1 hour. We're going to do this in 1 hour. And they had a song done, an hour later. They were just that, you know, focused on it. And is that, do you guys do that too? Like, we're
and
not
what,
leaving.
And what song was that by the Beatles? I'm just curious.
I believe it was Mr. Moonlight.
That's right. No doubt.
I can't think of a single. I can't think of a single song.
Perhaps the most horrible.
No, they didn't.
They
write
didn't
Mr.
write that
Moonlight.
Song. Yeah.
Right.
That's why it was funny. Yeah.
It was funny.
I'm such a.
That is a horrible song.
It is their worst.
No, it's not such a horrible song.
Isn't it their worst song ever, Mr. Moonlight?
No, it might be.
What's the worst Beatles song?
Oh, everybody says "Till They Were You." Till There Was You.
Well, again, not written by the Beatles.
No, that was a show too.
Yeah.
Come on, give us a choice. Worst Beatles song.
The
worst
Beatles, Beatles song. Like, that's like the Beatles are
might
the
I
Beatles.
Suggest? Might I suggest Obladi Oblada?
That's a wonderful song.
No, see, this brings up the whole problem with worst. You know, it's a complicated topic. Because if it's that bad that it gets your attention, it's got something, got some juice, you know. The really bad song,
you're absolutely
you can't
right.
even remember.
Right, so it's forgettable. You're not even thinking right. about it. Yeah. They didn't
Twist
write
and
that.
Shout's a great song.
Twist and Shout's
yeah,
a
and they didn't
yeah.
write that anyway.
Well, it's a great performance.
La Bamba's
sure.
a great song.
We have a heckler shouting out the names of great songs.
Right.
Welcome, everyone, to all the uninitiated, welcome to WFMU.
Right.
Where Twist and Shout is considered
so
a heckler.
So, John and John, I just found this out a couple of days ago, that you guys apparently went to high school with one of our DJs.
We did, in fact.
Evan Fong. Funk Davies.
That's yes. correct.
So tell us something really embarrassing about Evan Funk
well,
Davies.
I don't know if it's embarrassing, but Evan actually helped us early on with our
a lot,
with
yeah.
our music. He's a drummer, you may know.
Mm-hmm.
And we originally didn't have a live band, so we used recorded tracks. We performed with a tape recorder on stage. And Evan actually drummed for They Might Be Giants.
He brought his drum. I believe he brought drums to our apartment, and then I think he left
and
them.
Left them there.
He
yeah,
left
yeah,
them there,
yeah.
And so on all our earliest demos, you're hearing Evan Davies' drums.
Wow,
played either by him or by us. So that's a fun fact. But also, Evan's original nickname was Hunk Davies. Evan Hunk Davies, given to him by some, you know, a girl in our clique. You know, it was like it was a bunch of boys and the girls who refused to date them, and it was like this very loving thing that was sort of bestowed on him, Evan Hunk Davies. And then I think among the boys who were probably a little bit jealous of the hunk thing, we changed it to Funk because he was a drummer.
Yeah. Wow. It's a good thing he changed it to Funk.
Yeah.
Living with the nickname Hunk for 25, 30 years.
It's a lot to live up to.
As your hunkiness slowly melts away,
yes.
and you're still called Hunk.
So you guys were high school pals.
We
yes,
were, yeah.
Absolutely.
We happened very
yeah.
well.
And middle school and elementary to go all the way back?
No, I think we met probably in the last year of junior high, right?
And we met in junior high.
Didn't know you.
I knew Evan in
Oh yeah, actually.
And what was the first time that you two made music together?
I had a four-track tape recorder, a TIAC four-track tape recorder, and I would make these sort of experimental recordings with like a feedback and tape loop kind of things.
Uh-huh.
And John would come over and we'd like work on these we did a version of Don't Worry Kyoko.
Yeah, that's right.
The Yoko Ono.
Yeah,
song.
Yoko Ono. It was the flip side of
Plastic Ono
Turkey.
Band.
Yeah, the flip side. Right, and we did a version of that, and we were singing in Rod Serling voices instead.
That's
of,
right. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know if you consider that music, but that was
yeah.
probably one of the first recordings we ever did.
And is that recording still together. In existence?
Yeah, I have that recording. It's on a 3-inch reel to reel.
Well, you know
that I decorated by hand.
Ken would put it in heavy rotation immediately, wouldn't you, Ken?
Absolutely.
I know, it sounds great.
Actually, I have to tell you this very strange story about John Linnell and making recordings. John made a cassette, a reel-to-reel recording or cassette recording imiting Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah, was, yeah, yeah.
When you were like yeah. 12 or...
I was probably, my voice had not yet changed.
It was,
I did a crappy Bob Dylan accent. I don't even know why I did this, but it was like a testimonial for the local radio station.
It was like, you know, hi, this is Bob Dylan.
Right. I'm 13.
it's basically like the equivalent of a crank call.
And yeah. do you still have that tape?
No, but I don't have it, but no, they played it on the radio. That was the weirdest. It was the It was the underground station, which then became
a huge
mainstream station, WBCN up
in
Boston.
It's the big station in Boston, big FM station in Boston. And, you know, John's a year older than me, and I didn't, you know, everyone listened to BCN, like, just continuously. It was part of, like, your teenness in Boston, that counterculture. And they played this thing all the time. So before I really knew John, the thing I knew about him was that he had done this crazy fake Bob Dylan and impression as a radio ID for WBCN. And the weird thing is, tons of people in Boston thought it was legitimate. I mean,
no, they didn't. Nobody did. I think that's ridiculous.
I think they did. I think they clearly
it must have been a good Dylan imitation.
No, it was terrible, terrible. But it also sounded like it was being like, you know, it's, you know, beamed off a satellite.
Right.
It didn't, you know, it was like a Wallensack tape recorder recording.
Now, as a way to segue into our next guest, you know Susan Orlean and have been interviewed by her.
That's correct.
We have been interviewed by Susan Orlean.
She was actually a drummer for us for early
No, I think you're confusing.
We still have her timbales.
That's right. She left all the cymbals.
I believe her nickname also was Hunk. What was some? Do you remember any question she asked you?
I just remember I gave some snarky answer mentioning cocaine and touched my nose at a certain moment because it actually genuinely itched.
And it freaked
out the audience. It was like I was making like sort of a cavalier drug reference, and I was like, you know, the coke. And it was chilling. It chilled people. because I had probably pounded back like two large cups of coffee right before the interview, and appeared as if I was on cocaine. So it was terrible.
So last year, you guys had the song "A Birdhouse in Your Soul" rechart. So you had the same song became a hit single 20 years apart. How did that happen?
I think it was on a TV commercial, which is like the only way songs are heard again. that was in Britain. Yeah, it was very strange. It was actually a beautiful commercial, though. It was for children's shoes,
appropriately.
And what else, before you go, what else can we mention? I know your show...
Saturday night at Terminal 5.
I won't be able to make it, but one of my acolytes may be able to make it.
Right.
Yeah.
And when's your new album coming out?
One of my disciples.
Our new album is coming out in February of 2013.
Way off.
So get it soon.
Yeah. I was going to say our new album is coming out last summer, and so you can get it now.
Yeah.
It's really been a pleasure meeting you guys.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming.
I'm so embarrassed.
You're doing a great job.
Oh, shut up.
John Flansburgh and John Linnell.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John.
Now,
well,
Ken,
well,
you
that
were...
went fine, didn't it?
Oh,
that wasn't
up.
So bad.
You can all shut up and go to hell. This is horrible. Now you couldn't see them because I was at a better angle, but they both had very round heads. I think they might both have been cesarean born.